Ladies and gentlemen, in just a moment you are going to hear the voice of a man who will tell you some tremendously important facts.
Welcome to the Reality Revolution. I have such an amazing guest. I have Josiah Brandt back again. Please check out my previous interview with Josiah. The reason I'm so excited is we've gotten through all the particulars. We've gotten through all the generic questions. And now we can go deeper on some amazing topics. Josiah Brandt has an amazing channel. He talks about a variety of topics, imagination, Neville Goddard, the law of attraction. And I consider him one of my gurus. I look up to him. He's a great reader. So many wonderful things. It's always great to talk to him. Josiah, welcome to the Reality Revolution once again.
Brian, so glad. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm really happy to be here. I'm really excited about today's conversation.
Absolutely. So you had reached out to me and got me to thinking, and we were going to spend a little time kind of focusing on some specific elements, including what is referred to in the Neville community as SATs. I find it interesting. You know, a lot of times you go on Facebook and people will throw out SATs and you know, somebody that doesn't really understand get the full abbreviation, but the state akin to sleep is something that Neville talked about. And there's a lot more nuance to this topic and how it works and how we can use it. So tell me a little bit more. You had done a recent episode on this and you've been kind of like thinking this through. Have you found some new revelations along this topic of how to use this state akin to sleep?
Yeah. So what's interesting about this is I remember hearing Neville talk about SATs, which is, you know, I love how internet communities take ideas and give them a life of their own. And I really feel like that's what happened with SATs. So like I say SATs and people are like, what? But it's state akin to sleep. It's an acronym, SATS. And, you know, it's faster than typing all that out just to say SATs. I heard him talk about state akin to sleep right when I first discovered him, which was years ago. And he was talking about the importance of, you know, engaging with this state. And he used this romantic language about it, like keeping an appointment with a lover and like, you know, carrying something into the deep to, you know, the father and the mother meeting together and like having this almost romantic encounter. And I found all of it very interesting, but I didn't really have a serious breakthrough with it until a couple of years later when I started to get into some of this more esoteric exploration of these ideas. And in particular, Brian, what made me reach out to you and be like, hey, man, we need to talk about SATs, as I had an experience in Egypt in February. I went to Egypt and I had an experience in the Great Pyramid of Giza in the King's Chamber at 2 a.m. in the morning.
Oh, wow.
So I was there with a group. This was, you know, it was a whole, is the Matthias de Stefano. I don't know if you know of any of his work, but I was there with his group. And I was in the King's Chamber and I had this amazing, just, I mean, I don't even have words to describe where I was and where my consciousness went and what I became aware of. And honestly, Brian, it felt like a multidimensional activation on another level that I hadn't experienced up until that moment of being in that chamber at that time, having that experience. And there were, you know, I'm an experienced psychedelic traveler. I have experience with plant medicines, different types of experiences along those lines. And that to me is a whole other world. And for this conversation, I just kind of want to set that aside because that's kind of its own thing. I'm talking about, you know, endogenous experiences that aren't, you know, invoked by a plant medicine. I'm talking about even just, you know, again, sitting in this King's Chamber and having a multidimensional experience of time and space, you know, aligning themselves. And I'm like viewing it from outside, watching all of reality condense in front of me. And it just unlocked this new awareness of what is possible for us to tap into even while we're still in human physical bodies. So to kind of bring that all together, I know that's a lot, but to kind of bring that all together, basically what happened is I came home from that and I started experimenting deeply, really going deep into this practice multiple times per day, laying down, shutting down my senses, shutting down all of the external stimuli, but keeping my mind awake, you know, using some visualization tools, you know, to kind of pull the energy up through my chakras, kind of resituate, you know, kind of create this energetic environment to really interface with some of these more multidimensional aspects of myself. And it's really given birth to a whole new realm of awareness for me. And now I go back and I listen. Even just this morning, I went back and listened to Neville, Feeling is the Secret, Chapter 2, The Secret of Sleep. And I'm hearing what he's saying. And you know how Neville is. He drops these, you know, knowledge bombs, these mind-expanding multidimensional bombs in the most simplest way. It's just like, oh, says it so casually. Right. But now I can look at this sentence of what he's saying, and it just, it has this whole new layer of meaning and complexity for me.
It's so true. It makes me wonder, part of the incredible nature of the Great Pyramid is it's sort of a three-dimensional physical sigil. All of the art on the walls, it activates. Even when I'm looking at pictures, when I go and look at pictures online, some of that stuff is the symbols. You don't even need to know how to read it. It carries energy. Did you notice that at your everything, the environment, the walls were probably bouncing with energy in that moment, right?
Yes. Yes. So what I came to understand, I know that, you know, a lot of people have done research on this, but I came to understand that, you know, a building, a structure, architecture can be a multidimensional activator just as much as plant medicine can be.
It can.
You can have a psychedelic experience simply by walking into one of these sacred temples. And this is the other thread here, Brian, that I find so fascinating is, you know, ancient humans or ancient civilizations, whether they were humans or others, I don't know, but ancient, you know, residents on Earth clearly understood this and built their structures accordingly.
Yes.
And then we as modern humans are walking inside and having these experiences, you know, and it's just, there's another level here.
Clearly there, aside from Sats, just clearly there's something about the pyramid that is uniquely powerful. You know, I'm a big fan of the Law of One, and Ra claims that they built it, you know, and there's no way that human beings built that structure. So the very stone that you're looking at, the particles in that stone was most likely manipulated to move around. So inside it has this, I'm just jealous. I think I would love to go to the Great Pyramid. It's on my bucket list. So let's talk about Sats a little bit. Yeah. And what we're trying to do is reach a state where we're not asleep, but we're damn close to sleep. So it everybody's going to be a little different. You know, if you look at brainwaves, it's really that high theta. Some people are different. There's a certain point where you're going to lose cognition, ability to remember, and even a level of awareness. And it goes along with lucid dreaming as well. Yes. And the deeper that you can go while remaining still aware, and then being able to come out of it and remember, is really the key. And it's, and you're always sort of walking the tightrope of just falling asleep. And so it's on that cusp. And and like you said, I love what Neville says. It really inspired me. I put it in my book. It reminded me when he talks about sleep like the lover, it reminded me of that movie Lady Hawk. I still think that's the perfect analogy. You've seen Lady Hawk?
I haven't, no.
Oh my God, you got to see it. Okay, so it's likely you haven't seen it, but Michelle Pfeiffer and Rutger Hauer have been cursed. So they are lovers, but one is a wolf and one is a hawk, but they change at night or day. And so there's a little period of time at dusk when they're both in their human form and they can meet each other. And then it goes away once the sun goes up or the moon goes up. So they always have this little moment. They have this little moment when the lover's there and they can be together in that little moment. And that is the lover that we're talking about, because it's brief. It's like, oh, I've been waiting for you all day. Oh, you're gone. You know, you have this little moment. And if we can stretch it out, if we can learn how to go into our consciousness and stretch this out so that we don't necessarily fall asleep, but still be aware, that is where the magic is at. So if we can just learn to stretch that out, stretch out this time that we have with our lover in this moment, the lover, as another thing that Joseph Murphy says, that Adam and Eve story is you, that Eve is your subconscious. And you know, so it's talked about in Genesis, the lover that we want to talk and be and meet with our lover at night, right before we go to sleep. And so if we could stretch this time out, as they do in that movie, Lady Hawk, where they're together and they're in that same form. It's amazing. Yeah.
Yes. So to continuing on with your stream of thought there. So yes, there's this liminal state of consciousness, liminal meaning in between, where you're not fully awake and you're not in the unconsciousness or lack of control of consciousness that is sleep. Because I've noticed by practicing very deeply with this state, it's kind of like standing on a whiskey barrel that's in water, you know, and you're like trying to keep the balance.
Right.
It's like you have to kind of like, and then I'll notice there's like this little switch. And the more time I spend playing with this state, the more I start to identify this little switch where my mind goes into that higher brainwave state, into that theta cusp, right on the edge of sleep. And I start to lose some of my logic dominated thinking, right? And it's like ever so slight, but I've learned to perceive that window of awareness. So the question is what is this window? And what does exploring this window bring to the human experience?
Mm-hmm. It's true. I mean, I think it's the key. Now tell me what is the difference between SATs and just straight lucid dreaming? In lucid dreaming, the subconscious is playing around and you're just kind of you're not interacting with the subconscious, is my own opinion. That's the real difference. In lucid dreaming, you're playing around in the realm of the subconscious, but you're not necessarily having a one-on-one conversation. Does that, mm-hmm. what is
yeah.
your?
Yeah, so this is how I've come to understand it, okay? So subjective, but maybe other people have experienced it in a similar way. What I've come to understand is that SATS is a door or a portal, as I like to call it. And you open up that door and then there's a whole variety of different rooms that you can go into once you're in that state. And I would say that one of the places that you could go would be into a lucid dream. Another place that you could go would be into very intense imaginal visualization, like how Neville teaches us to plant imaginal pictures of the feeling of the wish fulfilled and give it sensory rich vividness in order to manifest. Mm-hmm. But there's other places that we can go to. And here's the really cool thing, because as I'm sure you're aware, if you look back at some of these geniuses as they were heralded by civilization throughout history, people like Nikola Tesla, they openly talked about how they would see the designs of what they were building in a state akin to sleep. They would go into SATs, and in that playground, that multidimensional playground, they basically download from source technological designs. So I would say that's another room that you can go into. Now, I started to do this for my own business. When I'm faced with a situation in my own business where I'm like, okay, I could go this way, I could go that way, I could, you know, build this, I could build that. What is the best way to do whatever this next step is in my business? I'll use SATs. I'll go into that state and then I'll choose that room, the room of, I call it the web of genius. You walk into that room and what I've come to understand is it's like a room that houses neurons and synapses. And if I can kind of start to see the neurons and synapses of the ideas and how they all connect together, which is very easy to do in that, relatively speaking, in that SAT state, then I can basically find my way to the concept that I can then download, that, and then I come out of that SAT state and I know exactly what to do and I know exactly how to do it. It's like, that's one of the places that you can go, but there's other places too, Brian. So, okay, so we have planting magical pictures, we have lucid dreams, which like you said, it's kind of like an indirect conversation with the subconscious mind. You have the web of genius. And then what about things like remote viewing, perceiving something that's happening in real time, but not in your immediate space, somewhere mm-hmm. else in consciousness, right?
Right?
So it's like, and there's more places too, but it's like, this is the door through which all of those different things can be activated.
Now, as a big fan of remote viewing, you know, there's some online videos of some really amazing remote viewers. It appears to me they're doing it in completely conscious. They're not in a state akin to sleep. So that's the thing. Maybe it enhances it. It's an interesting fact that you're saying, because the farther we are into the SATs, the less control that we have.
Yes.
So there's this point where how long can we maintain control of our thoughts in that moment? And then we're just falling into the reactionary natural state of sleep. Do you know what I'm saying?
So that's when you go over the edge and you end up falling into the water if you're balancing on that whiskey barrel.
Right.
So for me, in my practice, so I practice most mornings, not every single morning, but most mornings before getting up, I practice in that kind of liminal state where kind of starting to rouse, you know, the sunlight's starting to wake me up a little bit. And I'll use that as an opportunity to kind of go deeper into the conscious mind while keeping the body asleep. But what I've really found is that when I lay down in the afternoon, when I'm not super sleepy, meaning I don't need to rest in that way, but I can still go through the process of shutting down my physical body, shutting down all of the external stimuli that's keeping me connected to the 3D. In that window, I have a better chance, in my experience, of holding on to consciousness, even though my physical body essentially falls asleep.
Right. So there's so much to this now that it's so much fun to talk about, to unpack. Is it meditation? Is my first question. You think it can be the same or different?
So meditation is an interesting word because I've been around the meditation space for a while now, as I'm sure you have too. And a lot of people seem to define it a lot of different ways.
It's true.
Could SATS be meditation? Yeah, absolutely. But I'd like to offer that I think, based on my experience of how I've seen it defined so far, I think the most common or general definition of meditation is disidentifying from the story and just simply becoming the observer of one's thoughts, right? So if that's the most generic version of meditation, then I would say that, you know, SATS is one way to experience meditation, but I would say that, you know, if I'm going into SATS and pre-living, you know, tomorrow, or, you know, downloading the solution to a business challenge or something like that, that's not really disidentifying from the story and just simply becoming an observer of my thoughts. It's connecting to a different level of awareness or different level of consciousness, but and that could be considered a meditation just by definition, but in the truest sense, I am connecting to a story in some way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. So what techniques do you find that most effective to enter into SATS?
I love that you're asking this. Okay, so I start by laying down in a place that is my typical SATS place, right? So it's like our bodies, so not my bed, basically. If I'm practicing, I mean, I do practice in the morning and at night in my bed, but I fall asleep after usually. So if I'm practicing in the middle of the day, I have a specific place in my house, my couch, that is specifically for SATS. And I never sleep through the night on my couch. It's only for this type of exploration. So physiologically, in muscle memory, I'm not expecting to fall asleep. So I lay down in an area basically dedicated to this. If I'm laying down on my couch, this is what I'm doing. And then I, depending on what's going on and kind of where my head's at, I'll either put in headphones or I won't. I like to practice with both because I like to practice turning off stimuli, whether it's there or not, you know, like turning off my response to it, whether it's there or not, like learning to ignore stimuli, close my eyes. A lot of people like to use, you know, blindfolds or mindfolds as they're called. I don't, I just close my eyes and I just simply go within. And what I do is I withdraw, like I feel my skin, I become aware of the outside of my body, the outside edges of my body, my skin. And then I withdraw using my consciousness. I withdraw my awareness out of my physical body and I draw it up my energy centers. I draw it up to, you know, my sixth, which is really where the site that is going to open up all these doors. And then I choose where I'm going to go. What is the purpose of this? Do I want to pre-live tomorrow? Do I want to pre-live my interview with Brian Scott? Do I want to, you know, do I want to solve a business problem? Do I want to, you know, what do I want to do? And I'll then take that energy that I just drew out of my physical body because I'm withdrawing that connection to external stimulus, and then I'll direct it towards that purpose. And I typically, these are not long sessions because I have an active day. It's literally something I fit into my lifestyle. And I usually am in and out. Now that I've practiced a lot, I can be in and out in 30 minutes or less.
Do you find it that you're groggy in any way, as if you were coming out of a nap?
I used to be. The more I practice with this, the less I have any type of lag afterwards. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think there's a muscle memory aspect of this. The more you practice with it, the more you can get in and get back out. But right. I want to take this opportunity to talk a little bit about this. So in our highly caffeinated Western society, and I mean that both literally and metaphorically. Yeah. See, there you go. Our highly caffeinated Western society, a lot of us struggle to relax. It can be a challenge to fully relax, to fully stop thinking about your to-do list, to fully stop thinking about what comes next, or I got to care for this person's need, you know, if you have a family, right? Or this person's need, or I got to take care of this or take care of that. And it's like all of that, you know, kind of beta brain stuff can interrupt, you know, this like, let me carve out this window of time to like go in and explore my multidimensionality. Like on a very pragmatic level, all of those things can interrupt that. But here's the thing. This can be overcome with practice. And I really think this is one of those things where if you if you practice relaxing over time, it gets easier to relax, and your body will thank you for it. You know, your life will thank you for learning how to relax. Like, your longevity, your energy will thank you. Like, there's so many benefits beyond just opening up multidimensional doors to come from learning how to relax.
It's true. Yeah. I mean, I've found, and that's why on my meditations, I get sometimes complaints, you know, why don't you just go right to the affirmations, Brian? And I need to go into the body. If I'm talking through someone else, just forget about the mind. Just relax the body. Your conscious mind can very quickly relax. If I just focus on my feet right now and I feel some pain or my legs, you can start to relax it. If you just even spend a couple seconds, and if you kind of go through the body, it's not a complicated thing. You can go into that state. Now, you made a really great point, and I would definitely express this to everyone watching this episode. If you're meditating in bed a lot, you're associating your bed with sleep. And I don't have a problem laying down for meditation, but I do say that if you're doing it in bed, it's most likely going to pull you into that sleep state. You're not going to stay in that perfect sweet spot. And so you make a great point. If you can do it on the floor, on your couch, in a comfortable chair. Now, I also think that sats is a little harder compared to meditation when sitting up, because there's a tiny amount of effort on your back, and you end up squirreling around. If you have, it's almost like gravity kind of takes its course. Even a nice comfortable chair will help. And I think you make a great point. Find that other place where you can enter into that state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's interesting to me when I went back and I listened to, you know, chapter 2, Secret of Sleep, Feeling is a Secret by Neville, he talks specifically lie flat on your back, right? That's right. Like his instruction number
his
one.
His big deal is all about lying on your back, right?
Yeah. And I think that's exactly why. I think that you literally, like, to really set your consciousness free in this way, you really have to completely relax the body and completely relax the mind. It really is both. Yes.
Oddly, there's people that struggle with laying just straight flat. And I would recommend if you feel like you need to have a pillow on your back, you are shortening your breath. You're blocking your breath a little bit. And so some people find it uncomfortable because they don't really do it laying all the way back because they're so used to a pillow or leaning forward. Even me, my posture, I kind of lean forward a little bit. So it takes a little practice to get used to it. You know, sometimes maybe it's a super flat pillow that doesn't pull your neck up to block your airways as much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 So there's, I'm sure there's a lot of techniques to get into sats. I think one of the things that I think is so rich about this is how practicing with sats really for me, and I think for a lot of people, really enriches what it is to be human. Like there's life before really experimenting with sats, and there's life after. And I know that sounds very intense to say that, but would you agree with me,
Brian? Absolutely. 100%. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I agree with that. There's a state of consciousness that we can enter that is so wonderful, and be it meditation or sleep or whatever it is, sats gets closer to it when we're not worried about the how-tos and all of that, just relaxing the body and slowing down our brainwave state to this place. And so there is something uniquely powerful and special, and it has amazing effects later. Your health is better. You're generally not going to be as sick. You don't get stressed out when stuff comes up. You find yourself reacting. There's a little pause between your reaction to normal things that come up when I start going into sats more often.
Mm-hmm. I love for me how it puts my entire earthly experience into perspective. Mm-hmm. Because when I go into that sat state, and depending on where I go, obviously, but also just across the board, I'm experiencing more than just the garment of flesh that I'm wearing. And I understand that part of the earthly experience is to experience wearing a garment of flesh. I get that. And also, it's much easier to put that part of the experience into context and into perspective when we also have that firsthand direct experience with all that we are that is beyond just that garment of flesh, right? Yeah. And it was interesting because, you know, I think I even heard you talk about this recently. You were talking about how all of the avatars ever that have incarnated on Earth have one message, essentially, at the very core. And it's all that you seek is within you. All that you seek is within you. Mm-hmm. And for anyone that's like looking around and being like, well, where is it? Be like, well, no, it's within. And be like, well, I don't feel it. Well, you got to go in. You got to go in and you got to see it for yourself. Yeah. Well, how do I do that? Sats. You do that through sats, right? And we don't have to make it this, you know, big mystical thing. It's as simple as learning what you are when you're not super aware of being a body. And that could be a question mark, right? What am I when I'm not fully aware of being a body? What is this awareness that goes beyond the realm of the body? And here's the thing, Brian, that you know, I get so passionate about this. And the reason for that is because I really feel like we're in this place as a civilization, as a global civilization, where we're giving birth to a new level of awareness. And you talk about this too, reality revolution. We're completely transforming in many ways and rewriting what it means to be human. And I see a massive part of this huge upgrade that we're all going through. And you could talk, you know, 3D to 5D, whatever words or story you want to put on it. We are going through an upgrade. And a huge element of this upgrade is tuning into our multidimensionality, tuning into what we are beyond just a physical, five sensory, 3D human being, tuning into what we are as creators, as, you know, as infinite awareness, having a container of awareness experience, you know, being the earth plane and physical bodies and living in a, you know, albeit a little bit slow, but still we live in a thought responsive reality. It is a slow thought responsive reality, whereas some of these other dimensions are very fast, but we do live in that. And we can start to tune in and build an awareness of that when we tap into these areas of potential. So this is why I'm so fired up about this, because it's like the more people, you know, lay down on their couch, you know, and experience sats, like the more that this awakening spreads to everyone, because we're literally tapping in and bringing down more of these energies onto the earth.
Absolutely. Do you find any particular breathing techniques? How do you guide your breath in sats? Do you find it to be an enabler or can it hurt?
I would say that breathing is one of the things that you can do for sats. I know for me, I am much more likely to have an out of body experience, or I literally like come out of my body and, you know, go around like what Neville and other people have talked about. I'm much more likely to do that if I've charged the prana of my energy body first by doing a lot of deep breathing. That being said, I don't breathe every time before I go into sats, just when I want to have the type of experience that requires me to come out of body, if that makes
right.
sense. Right. Well, so, but to answer your question though, I would say one thing that I do bring to every sats experience is coherent breathing, which is the 6 seconds in, 6 seconds right. out, because that helps shift the brainwave state into that little window that we want.
Yeah. It's super fascinating because my episode today, I don't know when we'll be posting this, is about the ancient art of internal breathing. And I got super fascinated after I interviewed Curtis Childs about Swedenborg. Now, Swedenborg is related to Neville. Neville, you know, was a big Blake fan, and Blake's all about Swedenborg. And I started to see little Swedenborg references. He talks about God as the body, you know. So I wanted to know, okay, how did Swedenborg do this? He was visiting these worlds and angels, and he would literally stop. He would go and he called it internal breath. And it would appear to people around him that he wasn't breathing, and he called it internal breathing, that there's some, he even had, you know, there's some portion of the way that the lungs work where you're breathing internally. Mm-hmm. And this has been mentioned in some Hindu textbooks, but I do believe there's a relationship between breath and the sats, and there, and the deepest level is this almost, you know, you see people that have these amazing awakenings when they're holding their breath, because there's some portion of them that battles with it and it's hard, but there's this natural state that you can reach where you're not even really breathing. It's an internal breath. I'm still mm-hmm. fascinated about it because I have not experienced it in even close, right?
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It reminds, yeah. I can't say I've experienced, there's so much to explore here.
Because that's what Swedenborg was doing. Swedenborg was going into sats. He was awake. Yeah. And he would journal out everything, and he would remember everything. He would explore the heaven and hell in these regions, but it all happened from breathing. He would enter into a state where he was asleep, but the key element to his sats was internal breathing, what he called. So, you know, if somebody came up, they would say, he's dead. He's not breathing, you know?
That's fascinating. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, talk
about like the body is being its own garment of flesh and the consciousness being completely separate from it. It's like literally pull the consciousness all together, go and explore. And then the body goes on its own, like little, it's almost like it's cryo-frozen or something. Like,
right.
Like,
yeah.
It might be like
some amazing abilities that we start to tap into when we start really focusing on going into sats that science has no clue about, you know, that is beyond our realm for the body itself.
Yes.
That's the amazing thing we discover. Also healing when you're in sats and if you're trying to heal something, you can have some amazing, miraculous, instantaneous healings when you hit that sweet spot and you feel it correctly.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So you made a point about science there. And, you know, someone I was listening to the other day was talking about these ancient civilizations who built these structures that even today our modern science struggles with comprehending how it was done. Right. And it's like, you know, our scientific method has brought us a lot. I mean, we all enjoy the fruits of our scientific method, and it's also very slow. It's very slow, like in terms of like really hammering out the way reality works. It's very slow. So the question is, you know, did ancient civilizations use the equivalent of our modern scientific method? I think the answer is no. I think the ancient civilizations had another way of interfacing with reality and gaining, you know, these key truths that our scientific method is kind of a slow way of going about doing the same thing. So what this brings up for me is, well, what were they doing? I think they were accessing other states of consciousness and downloading information about reality, which is probably the fastest way, right? And then, you know, that ties up with what, you know, Edison was doing, with what Nikola Tesla was doing, some of these, you know, advanced artists that are world famous, what they were doing. All of them were going into these other realms of consciousness and downloading into this material realm that information, right? So, you know, talk about leading edge science. Yeah, we really have the opportunity to really go to the edges.
And what I'm excited about, and based on what you said, I have this belief that the Akashic record is becoming conscious and that we're slowly interacting with this and it's becoming aware and conscious. It's guiding. It's becoming active. It's becoming a living thing that there's going to be experts. I have this theory in the future where I'm going to go to John and he can go into the Akashic and see if this criminal did this. Maybe he can find some proof. I'm going to go and see where I lost my purse. And there are going to be some people that become so good at going into the Akashic, like remote viewing. Remote viewing and Akashic are the same thing to me in many ways. But they're going to start being able to enter into this realm of all knowing in the universal mind. Almost like a business, you know, hey, I need an idea for this patent. People are going to be able to go in and find it. It's going to become a skill, just like somebody that can code computers.
Oh, I love that, Brian. That's a whole world to explore there. And we got a couple sci-fi plots all woven in together.
Right.
I have to agree with you. This is where multidimensional humanity is evolving towards. And we're having this conversation right now, talking about the very planting of the seeds of it, which is learning to access this state. Like the people that will eventually do this as their career, this is going to be what they're masters at, is literally tapping into these realms of consciousness.
Right. Yeah.
And the coolest thing about this is there's no gatekeeping. There used to be. For thousands of years, there was gatekeeping. There's no gatekeeping now. Now it's all freely available. And we wake up to discover it's inside of us. We don't have to go anywhere to do this. We can literally just lay down on a bed or on a couch and go within and have access to literally the infinite multiverse.
There is another side to this. I was speaking to Shelley Kerr the other day. If you really think about it, when this realm opens up for us in sats and people become good at it, governments will be able to use this for spying. They're going to be, you know, people are going to die. You know, if it's all relative, anybody can enter into the state. It's going to change everything because we're gonna unlock secrets that we never should have found out about. You know, they can go into the Akashic and find some new virus that they can use as a weapon, or they can. There's all kinds of possible. You know, as Neville always tells us, you know, these infinite nightmares that we're experiencing in the furnaces. Hey, this is just another level as a part of this play that we're on, but. It's as we've learned with the internet, you know, it's not all roses and it's not all wonderful. Once this area is open, there's some possible negative side effects that could occur based on human nature alone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's why I see the divine timing for what it's worth of humanity kind of growing. I mean, we've been in an adolescent stage for a while and, right. and we're starting to mature, and you can see it depending on where you look. There's obviously a very loud section that is still very adolescent, but there's also other places. It all depends on where you look that are very much maturing. Like you can see that humanity is starting to mature as a species. So I think that with our access to some of these expanded states, I'd like to think that there will be access to kind of more mature ways of interfacing with it. And also, I mean, you bring up a great point. It is a whole can. And I love the analogy of the internet, because in many ways you could call this the multiversal internet or the multidimensional internet. That's really what it is. Yeah. It's the web that connects all ideas. And I think that, you know, just like you said, the internet has brought a lot of darker aspects of humanity to the surface, as well as a lot of lighter aspects of humanity to the surface. I think it's the same thing on that plane. But I think we're at this point where we're going to learn very quickly, just like humanity has caused, or the internet has caused humanity to mature probably faster than how we're talking to parts of ourselves. If you think, consider that we're, you know, one species, we're talking to parts of ourselves that we never talked to prior to being connected in this way. And now we're going to take that microcosm, macrocosm, we're going to go out a level to the universe. We're going to start talking with parts of the universe that we never really talked to before in this way. So it's going to cause evolutionary pressure, but it's all part of it. And I think this is a not only a fascinating journey, but honestly, it's the ride of a lifetime to be alive now and to watch this emerging. Like, oh my goodness, what a tremendous adventure!
Now, there's the other aspect to it, that they're entering into the state of akin to sleep is implying that a level of sleep, but it's really not, because like you talked about, there's the loud faction that we see. It almost feels like they're unconscious; they're asleep. You see people acting on a conscious level like they're asleep, but we're talking about being awake in a sleep state of consciousness. And there's definitely a discussion there for this sort of paradox, because yes, a lot of times what you see, these ridiculous, crazy behaviors, utter idiocy that you know, you scroll through your Doom feed and you see people that are just saying the most ridiculous things. Those people, a lot of times when I ask myself what's going on, they're asleep, and what we're seeing is their unconscious natures, as if they're sleeping and they can say or anything they want. It's like they're in some sort of dream state where they aren't aware of what they're doing or saying, right? They're in some state, but it's an unconscious state. That's why, you know, if we compare 10 years ago, we have people that will just people that you might have the crazy racist, but he would put a hood over his head and he would not want to show anybody. He would not say these things. Now the same dude's going to be out just, you know, saying the same stuff as if it's all okay. And I feel like it's like the unconscious is coming up into the conscious because of this natural portion of us that is starting to access these realms. And the reason that SATS isn't so important is because we're accessing this realm in an awakened conscious state, aware of everything else. Am I making sense to you?
Absolutely. That's really landing with me. Yeah. It's always, you know, there's always the two sides, right? So it's like the more we stretch our awareness into some of these higher aspects, the more the shadow is going to come up to be transmuted. And I think that's exactly what we're seeing. And that shadow energy will definitely show up through people sometimes, you know, just like the light shows up through people sometimes. And you can look at them as individuals. You can look at them as just expressing energies that are just present in the collective. And then you can look at the collective as a whole and just say, oh, we're an angsty teenager right now. And we're like kind of experimenting with some of these higher dimensional concepts and trying to figure it out.
Right. I love that, the analogy that we are an angsty teenager, because we are. Yeah. We're just little kids. We have no idea. We think we're this advanced, unique civilization alone in the universe, but we're not. We're just little babies, not even teenagers, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think on some level that the angst, right? That's why I say we're teenagers. I feel like we have this opportunity to mature. And you know, I consider myself a bit of a futurist. I love to look ahead at the timeline and just get really excited about the possibilities of what the human species can become. And sometimes I think maybe I fast forward farther than
right.
Certainly beyond like the realm of my, you know, natural lifetime. But like, you know, when I look ahead 200, 300, 400 years, I like to sit and think and ideate and create what does humanity look like at that stage of development and at that stage of growth. And, you know, are we babies? Yeah. If you look at the timeline of the universe, yeah, we're right. Super, super small, but we've also come a really long ways. We're really working out a lot of our, you know, mommy and daddy issues, like as a species, like we're really working it out. And, you know, we've got these avatars, you know, that have come through. And I think I put Neville in that category too, very much embodying the avatar energy. And they're telling us like, look, you are going to figure this out and you are going to remember who you are. And this is going to be the greatest story ever told. This is going to be the grandest adventure ever experienced. And that just brings me a lot of hope, regardless of how angsty, you know, we can feel at any given moment.
The sci-fi fan wants to keep going with that. So some of my favorite lectures by Neville is Days of Future Remembered. He has some friend that wrote him a letter that says, oh, I saw the future. And, you know, everybody has like a card and they all like run this card and that's how they eat. They just like look like they're having the most glorious meal and then they're done. And the guy in the dream is like, what in the future? It's there, people don't actually eat. There's like light that they're eating. There's some other implications in Neville's lectures where they ask him about the new age, this time of instantaneous manifestation. Mm-hmm. So along those lines, as somebody that just, you know, loves good science fiction, what do you see as a futurist? Let's look at this. What do we see as the future of this planet? Are we, you know, I've had this question asked to me, are we doomed? Because it's super easy to look at what's happening in the world, global warming and all this stuff, and just think we're doomed. Or is there something greater? How do you see the future boiling out together?
I love this so much. It's one of my favorite things to talk about, in particular because I see so much hope in spite of the doom feeds, you know, mm-hmm. that would tell you otherwise. You know, Brian, I really do see that, you know, we're in this place where we're learning to share the planet together as a species. And we're starting to come out of our, you know, tiny little local, you know, villages, and we're starting to understand more of like a global type consciousness. And I think part of that is the internet. Internet is connecting us. You know, it's a cacophony of voiced opinion. You know, you go on the internet and there's so many people talking about so many different things and being heard, probably in some cases for the first time. And yet when you look at the statistics, we still have at least 30% more of humanity that still isn't represented on the internet. So like, that's like over the next decade, I think pretty much the rest of humanity is going to come online. And that's when the conversation is really going to start in earnest. Then we also have this, you know, technology thing going on here where we're evolving so quickly. Some people, the alarmists, would say we're evolving faster in our technology than what our actual maturity is as a species, and our technology will end up ultimately being our doom. I have more hope for humanity than that. I do believe that, I mean, I do see that there's a lot of evolutionary pressure, but evolutionary pressure creates diamonds. And the more that I see the squeeze happen, the more faith I have and believe in the resiliency of the human spirit. I really do feel, if you look back through history, some of the most trying times in history also produce some of the greatest aspects of humans, some of the greatest, you know, features of humans shine in those moments of extreme evolutionary pressure. Now, is it all, you know, sunshine and rainbows? No, I think that there's going to be storms. I think that that's just the nature of how this world works. And here's the interesting thing. I think that, you know, I'm of the persuasion, of the opinion that we all, as, you know, as souls choosing to incarnate into bodies of flesh, we made the decision to incarnate at this place in the timeline. I think all of us signed up for this and said, oh, Earth, you know, from, you know, turning over into the second millennium, like beginning of 2000 up through, you know, whatever our lifespan is going to be, like, that sounds like one heck of an adventure. Yeah, sign me up for that. Right. And I think it's because, you know, if you go outside of time, I don't want to say the future is pre-written, but there's, you know, kind of like a bunch of futures that can be chosen from, but we kind of also know ultimately where it ends up. You know, we can kind of see the end of the play, even if we don't necessarily read into all the acts before we incarnate, because what would be the fun of that, right? Mm-hmm. So we get to choose, and we chose to be here. And I think one of the reasons why we chose is because we're going to live through some of these defining moments of humanity. And one of the biggest ones that I'm looking forward to is when we wake up as a globe, as a global species, and we are welcomed into our universal family or our galactic family. Absolutely. For sure. where we become aware that, no, we're not the only people out there, which we've been looking in the wrong places, or, you know, we've been too dense in terms of our equipment or our understandings or even our consciousness, right? It's like, you know, you can look at something and have, you know, one level of consciousness and not even see something that's right there to the, another person that's at another level of consciousness can look at the same thing and see something entirely different. And I think that's what's going on right now, but that's not going to last forever. We're rapidly approaching this time where we are going to wake up and be welcomed into our galactic family. Yeah. And that's going to put this whole experience in a very different perspective. And I see ultimately this time where instead of battling over physical resources, which by the way are unlimited, a lot of humans haven't recognized that, but we literally live in a thought responsive reality. We can just create more of any resource. It's just what happens, right? But if we're not at the consciousness to recognize that, and we're still in the consciousness of scarcity and lack, people are still going to battle over them. But the minute where we start to emerge out of that, and we realize that we don't need to be battling over resources here, the whole paradigm shifts. And I'm, you know, science fiction fan here too. I'm really looking forward to the day where every industry in one way or another is supporting one global mission. And that one global mission is becoming a galactic species, meaning that, you know, the space building, you know, all of our industry being somehow dedicated to getting humans off of Earth to go explore the cosmos. To me, I get so excited about that, in part because it catalyzes all of the human family and puts us on one mission.
You make a great point. And I haven't really talked about this in the podcast, but I've always been bothered. If you go back decades, there's been a concerted effort by a certain group of people to demonize globalism, to, you know, any level of the world working together in any way, the UN or whatever, it's part of some secret evil conspiracy. And you see it seeping into major political parties. And so we're always going to have this faction as we come together that's going to be, oh my gosh, this means that it's the new world order, or, you know, and it's almost like that has been done on purpose to push us away, because when we come together, anything's possible. There's always this implication that globalism means only the elites, but globalism, the way that you and I are talking about it, means everyone is one being. That's the true globalism, but we may encounter resistance because there's been these, you know, propaganda on some level, I don't know how to put it, that this is a part of some elite cabal that's trying to create this globalism, which actually it's not. That would be a limited oligarchy. That would not be a globalism, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm always blurring up there. So
I think it's a distortion of what is kind of a fundamental reality. I mean, like you're saying, we are all one thing. We are a global entity in a manner of speaking. And so a distortion of that would be like, oh, well, it's an agenda by some dark-minded group of people, or distortion. Right. And distortion, because it's that's rooted in lack, and that's rooted in limitation. And honestly, it's rooted in fear. That's what that is.
Exactly.
And, you know, thought responsive reality, guess what? We can create those people, and they can become very real for us, and we can very much feel like we're under their thumb, and then give them, you know, rent-free living in our brain, right? Which I have no interest in doing. So rather than twisting it that way, again, I adopt this hopeful perspective. And I say, you know what, we do have this opportunity to work together. And it's not about taking away freedoms, it's about enabling freedoms. But in order to be that, we have to be mature, and we have to be responsible for ourselves as creators. And in part, that means understanding that we're living in this thought responsive reality, and choosing what we wish to create by choosing our state of being. And again, to like bring this full circle, I believe a lot of these practices are really rooted in this exploration of our multidimensionality that occurs in sats.
Yes, absolutely. In that sat state, you feel a oneness.
Yes.
At first, yes. You don't quite understand it. The more you do it, you start to understand, whoa, there's a level of consciousness that connects everyone. I mean, it's a universal experience for people that go into the proper sat state. Right.
Absolutely. I would absolutely agree. It's the physical body, and it serves us so well in this way, but it can also be limiting. Physical body creates this illusion of separation, because I'm over here, Brian, you're over there, we have separate bodies, and I can, you know, walk out my door and go do something else, and you're not even in my awareness. Right. So it's like I think that I have this separation. But when I disconnect on some level from the physical body, or at least pull my attention out of it, and I connect into these higher planes of awareness, I become aware that I like to play with these states. So a lot of times, you know, I'll go into places where I literally feel that I am Earth, right? Because it's like, you know, I am consciousness. And then you can add anything after that I am statement. So I'll be like, oh, I am the entire earth. And then I'll just sit there and I'll feel what it feels like to be this giant spherical being with all of these humans living on it. And my connection to the solar system, my connection to the sun, my connection to the galaxy and the universe. And I'll literally sit in these liminal states of consciousness and experience these things. And by the way, I did this one time. A friend offered this to me. He's like, hey, you need to check this out. And I did this one time and I tuned into the frequency of Bitcoin, right? Random choice. But I was like, I am Bitcoin. And I became aware of, you know, this codified energy, not to make this a crypto conversation, but like I became aware of like, it has its own consciousness, just like the earth has its own consciousness. And it's like, we can literally do this with anything and we can understand it. And it goes way beyond the bounds of just this garment of flesh that we're wearing.
It kind of relates to me to transurfing, but on a different level. There's this concept, I know you are aware of pendulums. Mm-hmm. So if enough people are dedicating their own thought energy towards a thing, this thing becomes an energetic structure. And I believe at some point it becomes an egregore, a living conscious thing. Ideas becoming conscious thing, just like Disney could be a conscious thing. Like Bitcoin is a conscious thing. Yes. And as we enter into this sat state and become aware, we are aware that there are living conscious entities that are more than just humans in this field that we're in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really, this is one of those things we just have to say, like, don't take my word for it. Don't take Brian's word for it. Go experience this for yourself. Like this, there's a whole multiverse of possibilities of what you can become aware of and all of the ways that you can expand and even enrich in your experience simply by laying down on your couch and like taking a little trip, right? It's, you know, truly amazing. Yeah, try for yourself.
So I know you said you didn't want to talk about psychedelics, but let's come back to it just for a second.
Okay.
Because I talk about it a little bit in my book. I have this theory. Once we start to open up the third eye, for some people, it freaks them out because they see undulating forms of fractal energy moving around and they think they're going crazy. But you almost get the feeling like in this state akin to sleep, what you're experiencing is these certain visual elements. The world is more alive than we can suspect. There are unseen forces, there are elementals, there are all kinds of, you know, thought forms and things going on, that the world is this incredibly complicated and busy, chaotic place. What I think is happening on some level with some psychedelic experiences is that the veil is lifted and we see it and we have no clear understanding. Oh, that's cool. Oh, you know, we see these weird beings and forms and undulating forms of energy. But when we start to really get into this sat state, it's not the psychedelics that's causing it. That's what it's like. There's a reason we're blocked from some of that. And for some people, they may not be comfortable with that. But in reality, it's an amazing actuality of this level of existence. And I wanted to know if you've experienced or you understand what I'm trying to say.
I do. Yeah, I get that. Yeah, again, I'm experienced with plant medicine. I've had a lot of experiences in that realm that some of them, I kind of came back and didn't really know what is the value for my life,
right?
Like, yeah, I tripped out my pineal gland a little bit and I saw some crazy things, but like, and to be fair, I've also had some other ones that came back and I was like, wow, that was a psychic cleansing. And I feel more, you know, clear, more on mission, more on purpose, more in my body, more me than I've ever been before. So it can go both ways. But what's interesting about sats is I've never really felt dislocated as I have in some psychedelic experiences. And I think that, you know, when we go endogenous, we're playing with the chemicals that are already in our body. It's you know, it's the alchemy of me, you know? And it's like when we invite in psychedelics or plant medicines or other, you know, types of in, you know, plant medicine has its own intelligence, its own consciousness, right? So when we're inviting that in, now it's kind of taking us for a ride. And I feel like, you know, you can learn to control it a little bit, but you're also just kind of in the passenger seat, you know? So there's a little bit of a distinction there, but I do get what you're saying.
Yeah. I've said it before, but the best analogy is you experience this, that's the same wondrous state in both places. Mm. When you're doing the psychedelic, it's just like dipping your toes in the pool, but you're really not swimming. You're just, you know, kind of getting a little access. Maybe you jump in the pool and look around and come up, but you're not swimming and you're not in that environment. That's SATs will take you and make and keep you there. And the better that we get out of it, I think there are going to be some really amazing people out there. They're going to start going into a SAT state for hours at a time. And they're going to be able to really experience some profound levels of consciousness.
Absolutely. And honestly, Brian, that's, I've become really, really passionate about this. As I said, particularly this year, since having some of these experiences and really exploring and then starting to see the potential for how this deepens and enriches the experience of being humans. And also what it opens up in terms of horizons of possibility for our lives. And that's why I wanted to mention this. That's why I actually developed a training for SATs, a retreat where we focus specifically on the state of SATs.
That's right. You mentioned that in September, you have one and you'll probably offer a course after the fact. So people can find out more information about your retreat where?
Yeah. So it's portalretreat.com, portalretreat.com. So the idea behind this retreat is it's, you know, we talked about how sometimes people struggle to relax, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, we have all these time pressures and we have, you know, people in our family that are, you know, depending on us, or we feel like we have, you know, this work obligation, that work obligation, we're all this beta brain type stuff. And what I found is that once we really experience the SAT state, once we really get in there and connect to it and have that aha moment of, oh, this is what it feels like. That's what I like to call a reference experience, meaning that once we've been somewhere, it's much easier to get back. And I think, I believe that one of the easiest ways to create a reference experience is to step outside of our normal daily routine, hence a retreat, right? To actually carve out a week of time away from our daily life, away from our daily obligations, to go and just study intensively this state. Now, I make the joke, you know, it's not that we're just coming and napping for 7 days, although that could be a lot of fun.
Right.
There is a training component of this. There is a course aspect of it. And then a lot of practice too. And in the practice, we're going to switch it up. So we're going to do some practice sessions of literally just learning how to get our body turned down, keyed low enough to where we can separate our consciousness and kind of access these other states. We're also going to experiment with some technology. As I know you're aware, there are sound elements like coherent sound, binaural beats, crystal bowls, that type of stuff that can really help to shift these brainwave states. You're going to be experimenting with some of that, learning, you know, again, the intention being to create these reference experiences we can bring home with us. So it's much easier to incorporate into our daily life. And then also, Brian, I've got these deep trance light machines. I don't know if you've seen these.
Oh, they're amazing.
Have stroboscopic LEDs. Yeah. Have you experienced one?
I recommend them. They're amazing.
Phenomenal. So it was literally a situation. I traveled to Europe and I had the experience of one of these a couple of years ago, right when it was first on the market, this particular device. And it was literally a shut up and take my money moment. Like once I got under that thing and I felt my brain waves shifting and my whole awareness shifting just from the entrainment of the light alone and how easy it was. And just like the way that my awareness, it was incredible. And I was like, literally, I could not come back home without one. So I ended up buying a couple of them and I'm going to be using them, not every time, because we got to learn to do this on our own, but to help us create that reference experience. I'm going to be setting up and using them at this retreat as well, which is an exciting, you know, furthering of what is possible in these states.
That's amazing. When in September is it?
Yeah. So this year it's September 25th through October 2nd.
That sounds like a lot of fun. And so check that out, portalretreats.com.
Yeah.
And I'm giving you an assignment because you've gone deep on SATs and I want to see a book, man. I want to see a book on SATs.
Right.
I think you have enough just from this conversation to the stuff you're talking about. I think that you'd have a lot to offer with your own experiences. It could be a short book, but I would love to read it. I would love to read about your experiences and your teachings and techniques. I think it's a great, you know, so just count me in. If you want, I'll put a forward on that puppy. I would love to read about it. Keep going with this because I think you found a really amazing area to explore and expand on that needs more focus. So thank you.
Beautiful. Yeah. I had not considered a book, but now that you're mentioning it, I'm all over it.
Thanks. An easy one to write too. I mean, and absolutely. So everyone, Josiah Brent, check out his YouTube channel. One of my favorite people. It's been such a joy and honor to speak with you. And I wish you the very best. Welcome to the Reality Revolution, brother.